Hello, welcome to the episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJ287, also on LinkedIn, the website, dsmsports.net, and whichever podcast platform is your favorite. Just an awesome show for you guys today. I enjoyed this interview conversation so much. My guest on the podcast today is Jeff Wilson. You're going to hear his accent soon enough. He comes to us all the way from Ireland, but as you'll hear as well, he's been all around the world. Just a tremendous sports consultant, has worked in several capacities, just helping organizations drive their marketing, engagement, revenue, operations, everything under the sun. He's also author of a recent book called Leading a Grassroots Sports Club, all about managing a grassroots sports club, just all the ins and outs. You'll hear him talk about that as well. Just an awesome conversation here, just touching on so many things that are important to the sports business world. So here he is, listen up to my conversation with Jeff Wilson. I am back on the podcast with today's guest. I'm so excited to be speaking with him. He just gave me a great burst of energy and enthusiasm when we spoke the first time, and now we're going to record it this time. Really awesome experience. He has just such great work. We're going to hear about all his work in the sports space with grassroots sports marketing, working with some major organizations, working with countries all around the world on building their sport culture. My guest on the podcast today is Jeff Wilson. He is a sports consultant and also author of a book, Leading a Grassroots Sports Club, A Practical Guide to Managing and Developing Your Club. Just tremendous experience, and welcome to the podcast today, Jeff.
Neil, what an introduction. I nearly sort of thought, who is that you're introducing? But look, thank you so much for asking me to be on the show. Hopefully, I will talk quite slow with my Irish accent because when I get excited, it goes a little bit quicker. But delighted to be on the show.
No, the Irish accent brings a nice level of sophistication to this podcast and a lot of authenticity. So we certainly love it. And just it's a different part of the world. You got to see just different sports around the world and a different perspective that, us out here in the States, we don't always get to experience. And it's just such great an awesome opportunity to learn about that perspective. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, Jeff, tell us about you. Give us about an idea of your background, your career path, your stops along the way, and what you do today. And any tips for folks that want to work in your space?
Great question to kick things off. So sometimes I get asked this if I'm maybe lecturing at a university, and it's a good question. I actually started, and it is important to get your education. But what I did is very quickly I sort of found out I need to build up my CV. I need to actually have things because the degree definitely is a part to play, but you need to have what makes you stand out. And in essence, when I was at university, I did a few things. I was president of this society. I did this, I did that. And that helped me to stand out. And that sort of finished at the end of the degree where I got a job at British Telecom, your equivalent to AT&T. And I got a graduate job. I always say I got it because nobody else was in for it. So that's why I got it. I was the only person in for the job. And I was there for 10 years. Why do I start there? Well, having a background in a corporate world sometimes is really interesting to bring that corporate learnings into the sports world. And that's, in essence, what happened. I was there for 10 years in marketing and communication. I brought them across to the Irish Football Association when I joined there as a head of marketing and communication. Again, I got that job not because of Jeff Wilson, but because of the experience that I got on BT. And this was in 2005. 2006, we live streamed to our games right across the world. We got 30 people, so it didn't really work. In 2007, we integrated our online shop into Facebook. We got no sales, so it didn't work. But we tried all of this and taking the that sort of corporate world into the Irish FA into football, and then from there I've just went out on my own for the last 15 years as a sports consultant.
And give us an idea of the type of work that you do through your consulting and how you got into this grassroots specialty as well. And I also want to kind of learn about like what went into working on and building out the book recently.
So what I really focus on is developing a plan, a roadmap for sports organizations. They might be in football, or should I say soccer, basketball, volleyball, a whole range of different sports where you're developing a roadmap, a really basic, simple, easy to follow, but yet high impact implementation of a strategy. So I look at strategy, I look at governance, so how to strengthen governance so that organizations don't fall over their feet and they've got strong governance in place. Looked at league and club development, and I also then look at marketing, communications, commercial. So quite broad, and I think that's important, to be quite broad, because when you're broad and you're talking about strategy, strategy covers everything. So you're there having that expertise to do that. So those are the key things that I do. How did the book come about? Woof, how long have we got? So for me, my role, my job is at the elite end in federations, leagues, and clubs, but my heart is in grassroots. And my dad started a grassroots club in our local town, and that just, I seen how people were brought together. It was different. There was a belonging. Sounds a bit strange to say that, but there was a belonging. And then when I started to go to different countries, I started to see that grassroots was, some was more stronger than others. But what I seen in sport, the fatter your pyramid is on the grassroots, the better the elite side will be, but also the health of the nation, but also the strength of the community. So it's not just elite, it's all those other aspects too. And that was the start of a book. And I pulled it together. I got a publisher, Routledge, and I started to look at areas such as governance of a grassroots sports, income, having a plan, having a good experience, facilities, etc., 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 so that those organizations, those grassroots clubs, not only leave a legacy, but they have a future.
And I know you've worked with clubs big and small. You worked with major federations. You worked with some of the biggest organizations in the world in sport. And so, like, what are they trying to accomplish when you work with them? You can talk about it from the grassroots angle. You talk about it from just the general strategy angle. What are the challenges they're facing, and what does success look like then?
Yeah, it does differ from area to area. Some might be they want to grow the sport, so that's grassroots
Participation.
participation, and that's getting more people to play. Then at a federation level, so like US soccer as an example, they want to get those grassroots people that are playing for fun, and then when they get to 12, 13, 14, maybe move them to the elite pyramid. Those ones that are really top, I've got a special talent. No matter what the sport is, golf, American football, soccer, no matter what it is, the principle's the exact same. So many want to look at the strengthening the grassroots. Many want to then look at strengthening the pathway on the elite side. But in amongst that, you've got other things that are interconnected. Great coaches. I'm a big believer that your best coaches should be at your youngest age. Now, people go, what? Well, if you put your bad coaches at the youngest age, you're not teaching a kid how the technique of whatever the sport is right. You put your best coaches, they're getting taught right from the very young age, and you then can move them up the pathway. So for me, coach education's important, participation's important, elite development, club development, making sure you've got a strong club that's well administered. And then you've got other aspects that go along, such as competitions and having ensure you've got good competition management in place. But I think when you add all of this together, especially in the grassroots side, I want people to be active no matter what age they are. I want people to have a sense of belonging to the local community, because that's good for the head as well as for the body. And then I do want that those that are have got a talent, they can progress and develop. That's good for them to develop. And those that don't, they still stay in the sport because they've got people around them that they play sport with, and they create conversations and all the rest of it.
I was always my favorite phrase, or not favorite phrase, but a phrase I use is like, is sport is the ultimate like social lubricant. it facilitates friendships and communication, and it's a reason to reach out to someone, it's a reason to hang out with someone, it's a reason to go out on a night and play a game of footy at 9 o'clock at night or wherever it might be under the lights. And that's it kind of goes back to a little bit of the great intangible part of the value of sports. But I kind of want to step back and ask that sort of existential question of like, what are we doing here? Like, what is the ultimate, like, if you are a small country that, maybe your great hope is that you will one day ship a player who plays in the Premier League, and that's a great thing to be proud of. Or maybe you can qualify for a World Cup, and that's going to be really cool. Like, when you're talking about at the national level, or even at a smaller emerging club level, like, what is the ROI case here? Is it like, well, there we know there's a value to having a strong community, and therefore it's just, as a public entity, we want to, that's our charge, it's our job. Or is there a revenue mandate? Like, hey, this is ultimately going to lead to better competition, more fans, more sponsors, more media rights, and more revenue, more notoriety for our country because we're going to have some nationals playing in the Premier League, playing La Liga. Like, what are the like the not necessarily the business case here, but like, what's the reason for all this investment almost? And I know this is a very big question for people who've been in the sports world. It's like, of course, sports matters, and there's tons of money to make. But is that what's driving this, or are there other factors at play?
Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope it's not driven by money. I think if you build a product, the money will follow. So rather than just having a competition and let's just do it and go and make money on it, no, you have to have a clear purpose. What is the purpose of your organization? Be that a federation, be that a club. What is the purpose? If you go to Celtic Football Club in Scotland, Celtic Football Club was developed and was born out of a Franciscan monk, a friar, who basically wanted it as an outreach for boys, for food and all the rest of it. And to this day, that story is told when people join Celtic. If you go to the big ones, maybe not the franchises, so I understand that, but if you go to into Europe, many were born from the community. They were people who came together in the 1800s and played. It just happens to be, it's now, I think sport has moved into that investor space where investors then are looking back money. They see it as an investment,
Yeah, it's an
but
asset.
it's an asset. It is. But for me, I understand that, and I understand sport. You people play sport, they want to win. So I get that. My son's 14. When he loses, he's sad. When he wins, it's amazing. But sport can bring so much more than that. Not only the community side, but confidence, communication, community, and here's a big one, clear values that a club is aligned to, a clear culture, and a sense of belonging in your local community. So, in answer to your question, I think from a federation point of view, federations are there to govern, develop, promote the sport, and to manage competitions. Those are the four or five big things that they are there to do. When you go down to franchises, that model is very interesting, and you can see that the people in their local, like if you're the Dallas Cowboys, people are proud to be part of the Dallas Cowboys. If you're in Texas, okay, it might support other teams, but there's that sense of belonging, that unity. In other words, it's like a band of brothers, and the band of brothers, they're in the trenches together, and sport brings that we should never forget. So it shouldn't not all be about winning. If it's all about winning, you're going to be very disappointed every year because not everybody's going to win. Whereas, yes, you can have a focus to do that and be as best as possible. But if you're, and it's a real interesting question, what actually is the purpose of your, why do you exist? It's a very interesting, and when you go down to the deeper sides of grassroots, community will always come up in the top two or three of the responses.
Yeah, no, and it's a common, even for the billionaire investors who own these, major franchises around the world now. Like, they will still talk about community. It might be lip service at times where they really just want to add a couple more zeros to their net worth or to the value of their club. But we see it matters. And to your point, it definitely matters at the lower levels, and especially for, newer sports, emerging sports, and even sports that have a strong degree of participation. I kind of want to touch on the participation aspect because you've been on all sides of this coin. You've been in the rooms where, hey, how are we going to generate revenue from this? How are we going to, how can we get our corporate partnerships in place? You've also been with the governing bodies, with the associations, with Irish Football Association, driving participation. And there's, especially for these emerging sports where, and I talked about this a little bit offline as well, of like, hey, pickleball is growing in the United States. Therefore, if we get more people playing, it'll lead to more interest in the professional club. But we also, in the States, we have the most popular sport in the States is American football. Most people don't grow up playing tackle football. They just don't. They might throw it around a little bit, and flag football is growing a bit. But participation in that case does not really matter so much for you to cheer on the Cowboys every Sunday or whoever your team may be. So in your work with the IFA, with other clients, both on all sides of the spectrum, is it just a belief that participation leads to becoming a fan of a team? Like, are you trying to create fans of a sport or fans of a club? And are those things mutually exclusive or mutually, not mutually exclusive at times?
Oh, great question. First of all, let me start off by saying I think if you love a sport, i.e. football, then there's a higher propensity for you to, and this is a grassroots level. So if you play sport at a grassroots level or further up the pyramid, there is a better chance that you buy a ticket to go and watch the elite game. There's a better chance that you buy the top of the elite team in your area, and there's a better chance that you will see or watch on TV at the top end. And this is why it's so important for the confederations in sport, be that volleyball, basketball, ice hockey, field hockey, that they need to get more people to participate at a lower level, because if they participate at a lower level, whoever they follow, even if they're not at the elite end, they will still buy a ticket, buy merch, they will watch TV. And especially with the amount of money in TV, to me, this is a really, really important thing that a lot of people need to make sure that they do it. Look at the NBA. The NBA, there's a lot in that sort of Gen Z type area where, or even Gen Alpha now. In other words, they're doing the last X minutes of the game where people can go and watch the last X minutes. They're putting in the American football at Nickelodeon. So why? Because they're wanting the young ones to be attracted to their sport first, so that the lifetime value that they have is going to be solid for the lifetime of their lives, i.e., they're a fan in a certain sport or a couple of sports, several sports, but they then will invest in that sport as they go over, no matter if they're going to be an elite player or not. So organizations have to invest in this space. And just as a side issue, a slight bit confrontational, people say that the Gen Z and the Gen Alphas now watch less, or it's much quicker. I do take that to a certain point, but to me, it's all about storytelling. If you keep the hooks in place, they will watch something. They will binge watch. And that might be, and that's why the documentaries are getting so popular at the minute.
I mean,
Everything.
we're speaking right long after the Olympics just ended. Like, when else do you watch curling? When else do you watch ski half pipe? Because of the stories that are inherent to it.
Because the story, and you're almost going, oh, ah, and you're what we would say when you're watching a bit of TV, you know you're doing it if you lean into it. So if you lean into something, you've got me. So I do understand what people are saying, that when people scroll, and we do that, but if the hook is good, the story is good, it resonates with them, and there's hooks throughout the story, you will keep them no matter what the time is. Now, I do understand people saying about these bite-sized chunks, and I do think that sort of smaller bite-sized chunks definitely has its place. But documentaries has told us, so does good storytelling. And let's be honest, we love a good story.
Hell yeah. And I think, like, Just coming back off the Olympics as well, like in the U.S., Mike Tirico, who was the main commentator for the U.S. coverage of the Olympics, made a great point in one of his last segments where he was like, "There are kids watching now that they're gonna dream in 20 years that that's gonna be them on that field, on that court, on that half pipe, whatever, having their moment." And so is that what we're trying to accomplish here? Of when it comes to developing those grassroots clubs, when it comes to getting people to participate, is ultimately, we want them to want to kind of imitate the stars that they look up to. And maybe if you are a Gen Z or Gen Alpha, or I guess Gen Alpha more to the point, you go to your first soccer practice or football practice, and then you go on YouTube and you see some really cool stuff that whatever Trini Rodman is doing, or Chris, or Leo Messi, or Jude Bellingham, whatever, whoever it might be, and then you try to do it yourself, and then you go to a match and see some of the other players do it. Like, what do these pipelines look like in theory, from the work that you've seen and you've done, and also what do the pipelines look like in reality when it comes to developing interest, participation, fan of a sport, lifelong fan of a club, even.
Yeah, what I would say in general is the pipeline in Europe is quite strong. So in other words, there's lots of clubs. And the clubs, so my club that my son plays for, there's 28 teams in the one club. 28 teams
All under
in
the
the
same
one
crest.
club, all with the same crest. And everybody's a volunteer. Everybody. So we, and that's just because of years, and that's the culture and all the rest of it. So it's quite fat. When you go to parts of Asia, or you go to like Malaysia, Vietnam, places like this, or you go to places in Africa like Zambia, the pipeline is much thinner, i.e., it's a smaller number of clubs. Now, what happens? That doesn't mean people aren't playing. They're still playing out in the streets, but they're not playing in a competition environment when they are young, i.e., U12, U13, and therefore they're not getting the coaching. But if you look at take my son as an example, he has been at the same club from U6 to U14. He's 14 now. So he plays football, he plays every week, and he trains twice a week. So he trains twice a week, he plays every week, he knows all of the premier players from YouTube, all the premier players from FIFA, yet he will not sit down and watch a full 90 minutes because there's not enough storytelling in it for him. But he still buys a top. He goes with me to support the national team because that's his country. So for me, that's where the storytelling on digital needs to be stronger from a sports point of view. And that's why you're seeing little new things like 3x3 coming out because it's a little bit different in the format. But to close that off, so my son will just at this stage with development, he's developing. I can see his confidence growing. He will never be elite, but he will always be able to play the sport that he loves, physically play it. He's with friends that he loves. He's with getting fit and keeping fit. He's getting out in fresh air. All of those bits and pieces, but he still will go and represent, sorry, go and be in the stand with me. So that's a relationship bit. I'm almost handing down what my dad handed to me, and we will go and watch our national team, like US soccer, and we will be proud of that. So there's a difference. It's always different little elements in it, but grassroots plays a big part in supporting the national team as a fan, giving the national team players in their pipeline, but it all starts with grassroots.
I mean, even I'm a living example in some ways too. Like, I've played in a adult baseball league, and we in turn will talk about the local team, the San Diego Padres, when we're together, because it's another opportunity to connect that tissue. And granted, it's not like Major League Baseball is supporting all these adult recreational leagues. It's a private organization that I had to pay to join and all that. So there's a potential opportunity there, I suppose. And
Yeah,
I go ahead, Jeff.
but can you imagine if you weren't doing that with your friends? What would that impact you? So you're doing that. Let's say you're not getting paid. You're playing for fun. But imagine if that opportunity wasn't there for you. First of all, you don't have that network, that camaraderie. You don't have the fitness side. You don't have the mental health side. You don't have the belonging. You don't have the community. Maybe you're going to do events together. That's all gone. And do you have the same interest when you go to the elite side, when you want to go and watch the
Right.
elite side because you're already in the sport? And that is the, because when we talk grassroots, it's not just kids. Grassroots is from 6 to 56, and it's everything in between. And that is why it's so important. What we cannot have in sport is have 6, 7, 8, 30, 31, 32, because there's the gap.
Yeah.
No, you have to plug the pathway. And that pathway not only has to be plugged so people stay engaged, but you also then got to make sure that you've got good coaching, you've got good facilities, and you've got clear values, clear culture. And then what happens is those kids get older, they become administrators, and they can then help out
Right.
fundraising, income, and all those other bits from an administration point of view.
And the cycle flows in that sense. That's the idea. And you mentioned something too that I want to touch on, Jeff, and talking about cheering on those national teams, cheering on the crest, and the famous line from Jerry Seinfeld is we're cheering on laundry. That's how it was. And for many of us, it still is. Like, I will cheer on my teams regardless of if they trade my favorite player. I'm still going to cheer on that my team. But what you hear about younger generations now is they, and there's different more pathways, more avenues to fandom now. You might be a fan of a team because your favorite player's on it. If your favorite player leaves, you go and become a fan of that team. Oh, Messi's no longer on Barcelona, or you're no longer on PSG. I'll root for this team, or Inter Miami now, or LeBron James in the NBA. Or so you might follow a team around that way, or you might have your you might cheer on your fantasy teams or your bets. Hey, I have my I won a parlay thanks to this team. Therefore, I'm a fan of this team now. And so, like, how are you defining these new forms of fandom, I guess, and how does that affect the way that you are approaching it? Like, is the ultimate goal still to make sure that someone is a Celtic fan through and through, and regardless of players that come and go, they you are proud. That's part of your identity, no matter what. Is that possibility? Is that what we should be striving for, or is that just trying to chase an older form of fandom that newer generations, don't really adhere to?
Yeah, you do see a change where certain genres are going after the athlete. So it's athlete first, maybe club second. So it's not, whereas beforehand it was always your club is your club, and the athlete, it just happens to play for your club. So at a younger age, it definitely is, you can see people being at, now not everyone, but athlete first. I have to say I'm very traditionalist, and for me, you have to be club or country first. Your country is your number one, and then your club has to be up there as well. So in other words, the athletes come and go, but the clubs should never. So at that elite level, if you are fleeting around, where is the stickability? And I think here's why. I think there is an element of influencer power, social media power, talent, pure talent. And the clubs have forgot about telling their story. And the clubs also have forgot, and again, I've said it a couple of times, they've forgot about their culture. They've forgot about their values. They've forgot about their identity. And they have forgot about fans first. That is why, for me, especially when you see some investors, my word, my first bit is, oh, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Are they fans first or me first? And if they're me first, I'm like, oh. Now, the best organizations that I see is those that are fans first organizations that have clear values. And those values, so I'll give you an example. Forest Green Rovers in England, their values is all about eco, environment. It's all about the green. And people then who are aligned to those values are now supporting the club. So the club have now went down, obviously the leagues, they're not in the Premier League, obviously. But people are following that club because their values that align with your own values. And clubs have not done enough in this space. about culture, clubs, identity, and storytelling. And that's being taken over by the void of athletes. Some people are doing it, but they're not just doing it enough and doing it well.
I love that take. I think it's and you talk about like some of these younger generations. You hear about the narratives around like Gen Z, Gen Alpha. They care more about like they want to know what are the values of a brand, and not just think about sports, but consumer brands also. Like we care about what they care about, and we want to be associated with them because it aligns with our values. And you take that same mindset to sports, and some clubs lean into that, but many don't. And oftentimes too, they're doing it through the athletes instead. Like, hey, our values are the superstar athletes' values. Not they're not saying that directly, but that may be how a fan gloms on to a given athlete or a team is they relate through that aspect. And so I love the idea of like, how can we make clubs more distinct about their values and what they stand for, and give that an opportunity, make that the kind of the avenue and through which someone can become a devoted fan for life and make it part of their identity. So I kind of love that.
Yeah, and that takes time. It's not like a here's a little switch. It is, and here's what's got to be. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be authentic values to your community, to your area, and to the history of your club and the heritage of your club. So it must be authentic.
Yeah.
But then when those values and all the culture gets put out there, it must be then consistent.
Totally.
You can't just,
It
oh,
can't be
3 years.
lip-service.
Exactly.
Yeah, we see that a lot now. We're even like, and not to denigrate them anyway, but you see some newer clubs or rebranded clubs who are like, this is what we stand for, and it's all, and it sounds great on paper, but it's like, okay, what have you done to show that you stand for that? Like, show me the receipts a little bit.
Well, that's it. And what I don't want is this. I understand there's got to be entertainment, but do I go to a sports field for entertainment? Or do I go to a sports field because I've got a belonging, a community, a link, and a real undying love that I'll get a tattoo of that club, but not over that one? Because that's about
Yeah.
entertainment. This, it doesn't say this one cannot be, but this one's deeper, if that makes sense. This is a little bit entertainment, have a good time. This one still is that. It still is that. But this one is much deeper. And on this one, as I said, these are the people you know when they get a tattoo. These are where you've got that deeper connection, deeper belonging, because it's more deeper and it's more about sort of the heartstrings. And that's what we need to, I think, get back to.
Yeah, we throw the word fan around pretty like liberally, but there's a difference between a fan and a viewer, or whatever other terminology you want to use. And we just assume everyone that goes to a game is a fan, is a fanatic. That's not the case. No, not everyone there is a fan. A fan is a devoted person who has a fanaticism. So I think we need to take that word more seriously. Is
And
my
that's right,
goal.
but you're right. We have these profile segments, and obviously you've got your core fans. But what we want to do, we want to increase the core fans. You're always doing that. You're always building out your
Yeah.
core fans, but you're maintaining those through an authentic relationship, and it's about you. This is about you. Let's be honest. Hands up. Who wants to go to a stadium that's dirty? Yeah, hands up. Who wants to go to a stadium that serves average food? Hands up. Who wants to go to a stadium that does not care about you? No one.
Yeah.
So why don't we take out of these sort of key entertainment areas, take a leaf out of their books, but make sure you keep that belonging and that identity and the values are so important, in sport.
I love what you talked about too, about growing that core fan base up, because I think oftentimes we spend so much time thinking about, maybe taking for granted that those diehard fans, and thinking about how do we grow the top of the funnel, how do we grow the cat, how do we reach the casual fans. And we see it certainly out here in the States, probably to a growing extent in Europe as well, the intersection of sports and pop culture, of like, okay, let's work with a foodie influencer because we can get fans that way. We get work with fashion, with music, with other celebrities, with influencers. And oftentimes too, that you might go to a game, but you're really just there because you want to try the latest viral food that they have there, and the game is just a side thing. And so first, like, how have you seen that kind of evolve of sports and entertainment, sports and pop culture throughout your career? And also, like, is that sort of mindset of let's find these new ways to recruit casual fans. Does that play out around the rest of the world? Like, is sports and pop culture intersections even a thing in East Asia, for example?
Yeah, it definitely is that not only the pop culture, but also fashion. And what's happening now is people are now starting to put their club, like for example, Paris Saint-Germain, PSG, and now they're starting to be a fashion brand. You could almost say Juventus has done the same as well. They launched one of their tops a number of years ago at the Italian Fashion Week in Milan. So I totally get the idea of spreading out, their
Brand.
message, but it's got to be authentic. You know, it's got to be real. It cannot be a PR gimmick, and that's the key thing for me. It's not, oh, sport works. Let's do this. Yep, we're done. Bah, bah, bah. No, it that to me doesn't. For me, it doesn't sit. It's got to be something that's really authentic, that you've built up. It's quite interesting that Savannah Bananas what they've done, and that is authentic to them. They would say, we're not for the traditional baseball fan. What? But they've said that. So they're going for a different group of people, but it's all about being fans first. So everything that they do is about taking away the friction of going to a game, being at a game, and bringing the things from Disney, P.T. Barnum, all of those, and bringing that into a sports environment. They can do that. Why? Because that's their values, that's their culture, that's what they're about. It's about more than a game. So they can do that because that's what they have set their stall out to be. So be authentic, and I think people will really start to take from that, you know.
In terms of like exporting the brand through pop culture, I think it's one thing to say, okay, we have this influencer that has a lot of followers, and we put him on a soccer pitch, and he creates some content or she creates some content with us. That's going to help create more soccer fans, and it's going to create more fans of our club ultimately. But if you have a fashionista, who's wearing a PSG, a top on the streets of Manhattan, like who may not even know that PSG is a football club, like. What is that ultimately just a revenue play for PSG, or do they actually believe, and does it actually play out that eventually that fashionista or some of her followers or friends or whatever will eventually come to learn that it's a football club and then want to watch some of their games and become an actual fan of the sport itself and the team itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think PSG is quite a unique area because it's Paris, and Paris, you know, all that you can do from Paris, the
Yeah, that
city of
halo.
romance, and also there's fashion, the Paris Fashion Week, and all of there. So I think there is that little bit of a
Only a
that
few select brands really fall into that category.
correct, and that's why it's not just follow something for the sake of following it. It could be tourism. So maybe your idea might be a motorbike race, but the motorbike race might be in a real tourist hotspot. Well, how are you using the motorbike space to bring Harley-Davidsons? How are you using it to bring other events that create a bike week, for example, that drives tourism? So all of a sudden, you've got an event, let's say a motorbike race, but you have now said, okay, how do we drive this out for tourism using other different mechanisms all around the motorbike? It might be rideouts, it might be speed racing, it might be let's get as many different motorbikes together in the one space and break a world record, whatever it may be. But something that's authentic to that event that drives people in that case, tourism. So it could be. Today, this is not a word of a lie. Today, somebody was on to me about a certain heritage, and the heritage was in a Middle East country. So they're not about pop culture, they're about the heritage. So it might be history, heritage, tourism, whatever it may be. And somebody might say, but Jeff, not everybody's like that. And I would say, go into your history. And it'll be interesting to see what is unique about your organization in your history or the location that you're in that makes you totally unique. And there'll be something in there that you forgot about. And I'm saying go back and hook on that and make sure that people, you tell the story, you tell it well, and you tell it often.
I think what's really cool about this conversation, if you're still up here with Jeff Wilson, who's a fantastic sports consultant and a book author as well about leading a grassroots sports club, and it's all these reasons of like if you ask an average fan around the world why are you a fan of your club, like you can get all these different answers, and it's really cool to start to understand like, and you've seen a lot of it too of like, well, it's because I appreciate the rise, because I love their play, because of that, because of this, and it's just so cool to see the different ways that fans will glom onto a club, and also which are the most powerful ways, which are the most lasting ways, which are the ways that we can influence more, and it's just there's so many different ways to approach that, and you touched on too like and something I definitely want to discuss with you, because I think something that blew my mind when we first connected. I want to say what 104 countries or something crazy like that on your passport book is you probably need three or four passport books to fill all your stamps. And so I want to hear like what have you learned from being in all these countries, seeing how sport is treated, seeing how it plays out, whether it's a business, whether it's a public community good, like just school us on like what have you learned from seeing sport and how it manifests all around the world from a business perspective as well as a community perspective.
That's why I've got the bags under the eyes and I'm losing my
Ha
hair and I'm going grey because of the 104. My 104th was actually just this month when I was in Zambia.
Wow. Before we're done, I'm gonna make you name all 104 in alphabetical order.
I'll probably miss a couple. But what I would say from a personal point of view, it is amazing to see other people's culture, their history, their heritage, their food, but it also makes you more appreciate your own culture, is the first thing. I think the second thing that I would say, what are the key things that I really take away? And this is going to sound very generic, it's a driver. A driver. You would go into a football or a basketball or volleyball club, league, or federation, and you will know within 1 hour who is the driver, who is going to take this plan, who is going to drive it, and who's going to leave the legacy that this organization and this country deserves. So for me, one of the biggest things for me, it's people. And when I look at people, I always look for who's the driver, who's the leader, who's
Yeah.
the person that says, come on, this is the way we're going. And I think that is a real massive, massive area for me. Second of all, you always can get different innovative ideas. When you go to Scandinavia, Norway, Sweden, they use a lot of app technology regarding their sports. And it's natural to them. And because they're an advanced country. But you go to other people and something very small that you're actually saying to them because you're a fresh pair of eyes makes a big difference. And Neil, let me be really clear. I'm dead average. I am nothing special. But when you've been to 104, be it in the Caribbean or in Asia, you're seeing what works. And in most cases, it's down to people. And you've noticed I haven't said budget, but
Yeah.
it's down to people and the innovation and the drive for people to say, a can-do attitude. Yep, we can do this. Rather than people saying, putting barriers up and saying, ah, but you don't want an ah, but around you.
And what are some of these, like, especially some of the more developing countries that may not have a strong sports infrastructure? What sort of the order operations, like what are some of the objectives they can accomplish early on? Like, is it just like, hey, we can't even think about what it means to have a domestic league that drives real revenue and is an actual business? Like, we need to get our grassroots, or we need to make sure that we have just like the ability, we have fields, have coaches, like we can't even think about professionalization yet. Or sometimes it's the other way around, where like maybe is the professional club and or is it about trying to chase international stature or whatnot? Like, what are you kind of seeing of it when you approach whether it's a new community or someone that already has an existing infrastructure and it's like, hey, you want to improve it? What are the areas that can actually move the needle the most, and what are the areas where they're sometimes ahead of the curve or behind the curve?
Yeah, I think for a developing federation, it's the quick wins. It's nothing, transformational. At the top end, it is something that moves the needle. Let me give you an example. I was in one of the Caribbean countries doing a strategy for them. And I said to them, how are you going to make money? And they says, look, we want to get sponsors, we want to get TV rights, blah, blah, blah. Just wasn't possible. So what I said to them is, what do you do for fun to generate money? And they said, we play a lot of bingo. Now, bingo is a game that you play. It's played a lot of Commonwealth countries. And I says, okay, let's do at the football facility a bingo night. They sent me the photograph. The stadium was full. Full to the throat. And when I mean full to the throat, so in other words, rather than going after broadcast money for a small island that they never would have got broadcast money, they something simple. What does people like? Bingo. Let's organize it in our facility. And I still have the photograph, and I thought it was great. Give me the second one. Tajikistan. Now, Tajikistan is just above Afghanistan. And they said to me, Jeff, it's a football federation. We want to do an outside broadcast van and we want to create a TV channel. I went, what? You want to create a TV channel and for sport? Yeah. And I said, okay, well, let's go through the process. So we created a business plan. Fast forward 18 months, they bought an outside broadcast van and they launched a TV studio, and they still have the TV studio 10 years later, of which they buy the rights for the Premier League. So that was being really innovative and really different. And that's all about the drivers. It's all about those drivers who says, no, that's a clear identity. So having a clear driver with a clear plan and getting everybody with a clear vision in behind them that they can move forward.
And so when you look at some of these, I'm trying to think of the right terminology. Maybe it's Commonwealth, or maybe it's colonization, neocolonization to some extent. But when you see like in like and it's been a it's very positive. I want to make sure this is a positive spin, a positive story. Like NBA, what they've done in Africa, for example, building up the BAL out there and creating infrastructure, creating grassroots, and I'm sure there's other like MLB, what they've done in the Caribbean and Dominican and in some of the Hispanic countries as well, with creating academies and creating infrastructure there. Like, is that the path for a lot of these nations around the world to develop sport? Is, we can it's better to we can benefit from these large international global leagues who can come in and build help us build infrastructure. Is that the right way to go about it? Or are you seeing like, is there a better way to like, hey, we need to start youth, we need to start at the youth level first. We need to start like, let's not create your adult league, or let's go through the government. Let's not go through the government. Let's do it through private money and through private investment and private capital. Like, what are the pathways, especially if you're running a basketball Africa league, or NBA Africa, or if you're running, the NFL's outreach to global communities? Like, what is the best path from to go about actually having success overall? And how were they made to find success? Participation and fandom, etc.
Yeah, I think the likes of the NBA Africa and all of those franchises definitely have a place to play 100%. So they play because that gives you the wow. That gives you the that's where I want to be type thing. Or as a fan, you go and watch. So, and that is the elite of the elite, the best of the best. So I think there's something nice about that. For me personally, it has to start with government. The question you have to ask government, do you want a healthy nation? Yes? No? Everybody will say yes.
I hope so.
Okay. Why do you want a healthy nation? Well, it helps on the mental side, it helps on the physical side, it helps in the health, putting less people going through the health. You do know that in Ireland we have Walk a Mile, and they've done research for the kids that are in primary school. And when they walk a mile every day, they have identified through research that their brain are switched on because they're getting that little. So even in education, sport can play a part. If I said to you, what's the eat well plate, for eating healthy, you might say, not sure, protein, carbs. But if I say to you, what does Messi eat before he trains? And what does Messi eat when he's not training? Woo, I'm listening. So sport has a part to play in all of those bits. But to do that, government must invest. In general, apart from a number of ones like Rwanda is putting a lot of money into sport, sport is left to the volunteers and the grassroots. And all the other money is put into other pockets. And I get that. But imagine if people, a government, put more money into sport, what would that do? What would the impact be in their country if they just invested more? So for me, it starts with the government, and that's about having a clear sports policy. Now, not strategy, but a clear sports policy. And then from that, it's having strong federations, associations with strong clubs that develop it. And each of the club must have a youth pathway. Each club. So I would go to some places like Ghana. I've been to Ghana. And in Ghana, they would have their clubs of literally one senior team or maybe a senior team and an under 18 team. No, it should be U6 right the way up to senior team. And that's about culture change. So that's where it's going to take a bit of difference. But to me, it starts with government having a clear sports policy, giving the requirements and the needs to the federations, and them giving it to the clubs in terms of developing the clubs and the club system is extremely important to grow. But the likes of the NBA, that has the wow factor. That's the shiny bit. So that also has a part to play.
No, but I love this insight because you're ultimately you can align your goals or the goals of a given organization with the goals of the country at large with the public. And we always kind of if you think about how much value has Leo Messi delivered to this Argentina culture in general, the country of Argentina, by exporting culture around the world. Everyone knows that Messi is Argentinian, and that travels the same way you might you might know more about whatever, Egypt, because Mo Salah and all, like, it's a cultural export that if you want to become relevant around the world, especially as a smaller nation, doing that through sport is an actual real thing. While also, of course, as you mentioned, like being able to improve the living standards and economies at home as well. So I love being able to align with public goals.
You're right, and I'll just to add on another idea. I was at a country, and what they found out in the country, there was a high in one of the cities, and in one of the cities there was a high crime rate, and people were breaking into people's homes at midnight. Okay, so the police did some research, and what they found, the most of the robbers, the people who were robbing and breaking, were football into football. So what they did, they went to the local football association with ourselves and said, we want to create something. So we went away, we looked at it, we came back with midnight soccer. So when they were stealing, we actually got them to put playing football. Guess what happened? Crime
No
rate
way.
went down. The police went, happy days, we've solved it. Guess what happened? The crime rate went back up again because they stopped it. So then what happened? The police said, no, we need to do more of this. So rather than just in and out, that is not fan engagement. That is not a using sport for the benefit. It must be over the full year. And that's exactly what they did. They did midnight soccer in key areas where they knew high crime rate, people were involved in like football. And then they used football as the enabler to teach them and to re-engineer them. Now, you're not going to solve everything, that's for sure. But I tell you, it works. And I'm going to give you another one just really quickly. We did it in Northern Ireland. We got money from the government. So this is a good example. Money from the government to tackle mental health. And there was a high percentage of suicide in Belfast. So what we did is we trained up someone and we delivered suicide awareness using football as a platform for learning and for enablement. And we went into a school, and in one of those schools, a 15-year-old girl, after the end of it, came up to our lecturer, our consultant, and said she was been having suicidal thoughts. She was able to, or our person was able to put that young girl into the pastoral care team of that school. I believe to this day we saved that girl's life because football was the platform that of the to allow her to open up, and we were able then to deal with that in the respective channels. We weren't the experts in suicide, but we were the experts in football, bringing it out, and we then give it and partnered with the experts that were able to give her the focus that was needed.
Oh man, that's powerful stuff. I'm it's gonna be hard to follow up on that, but I do want to tell a couple more quick things before we get to the terrible stat. I can keep you all day, Jeff. I feel like we're just getting started here almost. And I want to touch on, like, when it comes to especially introducing a new sport into a country, into a community, and obviously the NFL is doing this all the time, trying to make American football popular in Europe. They're trying, and maybe it's making headway, maybe it's not. You know better than me, being on the ground down there. Like, how have you seen new sports get introduced? And like, I always joke too when I speak to some of my friends in Europe, like, what's number two behind soccer, behind football in many communities? And it's like, well, maybe it's basketball, maybe it's cricket, maybe it's rugby, maybe it's nothing. It's number one is soccer, and then way down number two is something else. And so, first, like, what other sports are there besides football that actually has an opportunity? And how do you introduce especially some of these sports with more unique rules that are hard to understand? Maybe it's the U.S. trying to become cricket fans, cricket players, or like I mentioned, like American football in Europe. So what are you seeing that works there? And or oftentimes is it just you have to get over a hump, and maybe it's to gain those needle movers, as you mentioned before as well.
Yeah, what I'm seeing is shorter form games. So,
Like T20.
like T20 is a perfect example. 3x3 is another example. So those shorter form or high adrenaline. So high adrenaline in terms of maybe it might be something in motorsport or whatever. But the short form for me. Seems to be getting a lot more interest. And I think number one, they're breaking the normal rules of the traditional federation. So, in other words, that rule is boring. Right, take that rule out. We'll do something. So, if you look at the Kings League in football, it's a small-sided game, but it's with influencers. So, for me, short-sighted. Number two, the impact of influencers. So influencers either owning the team or being involved in the team, and that reaches out to the many. I think being urban is quite an interesting and going to where the people are, not the people having to go to the facility. They're going and doing it where they are, I think is really really important. But definitely that high impact, fast, urban, trendy. Seems to be and short form seems to be taking off. It doesn't mean that all the other ones are dying. Definitely not. It's just people are seeing things in a different and these ones that seem to be growing are either breaking the rules or it's a shorter form version that takes away friction points.
So what is to ask that big question, what is number two behind football? Whether it's in Ireland, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in Europe, is it even close to what number two is? Is it a tie between two and three and four? What else is there besides football?
Great question. And I'm going to be a diplomat and sit on the fence for the simple reason it depends whether it's participation or whether it is, fan attendance. So I could say to you, the best and the biggest sport in the world's walking. And you would go, ah, come on. It could be
Touche.
cycling. You might say, ah, but if I think if we take maybe events that are seeing growth, let's say in that sort of area, I think women's football is definitely seeing a massive growth. I think basketball is seeing a massive growth, especially on 3x3. I think sports like volleyball, when you see volleyball at the Olympics, especially like a beach volleyball, it's very music and high energy. I think it's a very interesting sport. I think some motorsports probably a little bit in the combat area. There's some of those like MMA is obviously a little bit as well. So very, very difficult to say which one is definitely growing. But I think football is still, soccer is still far up ahead. What do I see in soccer in 50 years' time? I don't see 45-minute halves. I don't. I see them less in 50 years' time.
Ooh, we could have a whole another episode on future thinking about sports, predicting the future of all these sports.
Indeed.
I think football is so easy to play because all you need is a patch of grass or even street and a ball, and you're good to go pretty much. Whereas others, you might need a basketball hoop, you might need equipment, you might need other large facilities, and it's so much easier. It's so easy to football, and it's very easy to pick up as well. So I think that's why you can see it in every country around the world.
And again, because there's influencers, there's people who are telling the story, Ronaldo, Messi, et cetera, people are following them and they want to follow them. The micro influencers, people are following them too. And then there's so much content being created. Like you go to Haaland, Haaland now has his own YouTube channel and, he dressed up as the Joker. And like, what's that got to do with football? No, people want to know about him and they want to know about his background, and that's what people are, they want to see people. People want to deal with people. People want to be around people. I know people may say that's wrong. Well, I would challenge them and say, if you don't want to be around people, go into a room and stay there for 5 years and let me know how you're getting on after 5 years. We want to be around people.
Yeah, we went through that with the pandemic, and we think about like the global epidemic of loneliness in sport, and even attending sports games is a pretty a good cure for that, of being around others when you're participating or cheering on your favorite team. So I love that. One last thing, Jeff, brings up a terrible stat, which I definitely want to touch on because I really enjoyed your insights when we've spoken in the past around match day experience, and something that I think I'm always kind of blown away, or not necessarily blown away, but the I don't think people really appreciate how different it has been. I mean, it's evolving, but how different the European, match experience is from what we have in the States, where it's loud and music and tailgating and it's a big party, and there's halftime kiss cams and gimmicks and games and all that. And it has not really been that way, where there's a ton of sponsored elements and a ton of integrations like that with European football matches. And so, like, how are you seeing, I guess, match experience evolve in Europe, to become more gimmicky, to not to lack of a better term, more sponsor integrated, and also if there's any differences around match experience around the world? It's always fun to see like the Korean baseball games go crazy because you see all how that's so different. And so just give us an idea of what you're learning, what you're seeing, and what we should be thinking about when it comes to match experience.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting one about outdoor v indoor. So the outdoor match experience is slightly different than the indoor game day experience. Because it's indoor, there's probably a little bit more sheltered from the wind, plus also the rain, and also
Yeah, the elements.
the elements, and but also the atmosphere can stay in tighter in a closed space. So I think that's the first thing I would say. I think second of all, what we're being better at is actually seeing the fan, not as a customer, but as a guest. And I'm really, really big in this. Neil, if I came to your house and I was there as a guest, what would you do?
I would treat you well and make sure that you're taken care of.
I guarantee you it might clean the house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very good point. Definitely.
You might put on your best hat. You might put on your best clothes. You might wash your hair. You might go out and get the best food. So imagine if in any sport you were seen as a guest, not as a fan. Now, fans will always be fans. Let me be really clear. Fan will always be a fan because they're fanatics. But imagine if the organization viewed the fan as a guest, how would that change the overall experience? So what we're starting to see is better food options. We're starting to see more welcome teams. We're starting to see more fan zones, and those fan zones will have local entertainers as part of it all. There's also more things to do in the concert, in the concourse area, and there's a different variety, and it's clean, just simply clean. So these are things that we are seeing. I think. A lot will depend on the actual facility. As I go further out, I was in Malaysia, and in the facility that was at Malaysia, they had a whole strip of Malaysian food, and there was a live band. The live band, it was as if Bruce Springsteen was giving a Dixie. Bruce Springsteen was playing, they were just doing all these cover And I was able to go down, and all the different food options that you had really made it very, very special. So I do think I see more people trying to get localized entertainment. I do see people getting a little bit more noisy fans together. I was at Austin FC game, and I really enjoyed the Austin FC experience when I was there at the MLS game, and how they used the lights, the drums, the noisy fans all together. So I think Europe can learn from America in terms of the experience. I really do. I think America can learn from Europe in terms of the values, the culture, the heritage. And that's where sports should be, where we learn together. But if I go to Africa, Rwanda, the facilities in Rwanda are excellent from a basketball and a football point of view because the country's invested in them. But other ones, the stadiums aren't as well invested. And therefore, then there's not the same eye in terms of the actual experience. So, what we're seeing now, there's a tipping point where organizations are really starting to look at the overall experience on the journey. Now, what do we mean by that? Mapping out the touch points on game day.
Yeah, we always say like driveway to driveway.
Driveway to driveway. And that one experience might be, for example, outside the venue. But what are the five or six things you have to get right outside the venue? And how are you grading them? And what makes you go, wow? And what I mean by that is if you come up to me, Neil, and said it's your birthday, and I went, oh, that's great. And then I just left. But then during the game, somebody come up and sung happy birthday to you right at your seat. That's just that little bit of a wow moment, something that little bit different. The other side of it in Europe, we're still very heavily involved, like in America too, in the atmosphere. So making the atmosphere be able to generate itself and have those really interesting songs that people will know and as part of their history and culture. So I think what I see in America, parts of Europe where the facilities are well developed, the standard of game day experience is definitely now, it's the next bit. Once you've got the facilities in place, it's being put up. In the other ones, it's probably not just as advanced. Take away Australia, obviously, and Japan. But the other ones are catching up, first of all, on the facilities. And if they can't do that, then they're doing just some small, simple things like parking the cars and getting people all in and having just a welcome team.
No, so much good stuff in there, man. Like, and I tell you too, like you, and this is why you and I have connected on this too, around some of the best stuff you see is someone sometimes at these smaller levels, at the minor league levels, because they have to drive attendance. You know, for these large major leagues, they obviously want a packed stadium. They want fans to be on there, but they're getting the bigger piece of their revenue probably still come from media rights. Or at the minor league level, you have to get fans. Like you're not, you may not even have a media rights deal, and so you have to get fans into that stadium, into that arena. So you have to make sure that it is everything is. There's no reason not to go. Everything is perfect. Everything is fantastic because you're selling the experience more than you are. You know, you get to be a TV viewing audience ultimately.
I'll say it again. You're absolutely right, Neil. I'll say it again. Develop the product, have an amazing service, and the money will follow. Whereas what we try to do, let's go get a sponsor, but the product's rubbish. And but I think it's great. No, but it's rubbish. And so to me, it's develop the product, have an amazing service, and treat people right, and the money will follow.
And what's fascinating, you probably are seeing this, from your purview of what we're seeing happening in the States, with more and more venues now are going to this friendly, affordable pricing. They're not going to charge you $8 for a bottle of water anymore. You can get it for a dollar or two. And it's like, okay, all of a sudden, if we think about the fans first and don't just think about how do we maximize, revenue, you actually end up making more money because more people come, more they're willing to spend more. They're willing to not eat dinner before they get there. Because they can afford it. And it's fascinating to see that. And I think it's a great, sort of like a confirmation that you're doing the right thing by that.
That's right. And it gets back to that question that we talked about before. What is the purpose of your organization?
Yeah.
Is it fans first? Is it community and being part of the community? Or is it just about making money because the investor wants me to make money? Let me just caveat that by saying not maybe every investor's like that, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We must make money, must make money, must make money. Why don't we measure the fan sentiment? Why don't we measure what people think of us, what the
Yeah.
brand is like? Do they where's our love scale of the fans? Do they love us or do they not? Why is that not important?
That's the
Because
real bottom
again,
line.
that's get that right. And for that's obviously at the elite end. And it same has got to be at the grassroots end, the exact same. Make it a great experience. Just make people feel welcome. Again, those are elements that I cover in my book in terms of being a welcoming club and having all the elements in place. So whether you're a parent who brings your son or daughter to the academy, you need to be welcomed.
Yeah.
You need to be told this is what our values are. You need to be told the time that training's on. You need to be told here's our WhatsApp group. Would you like to be part of it? You need to be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, so that they feel part of it from an early days and that of your son or daughter as well, so that they stay in the team for the lifetime.
Yeah. Driving that feeling of welcoming and belonging from day one, and making it a part of the inherent part of the experience at the club level, no matter how big or small it is. Oh man, you should be producing this podcast. It's a great place for us to call up this part of the interview. But we're gonna have some more fun with Jeff coming up in our Every Tier segment. First episode's shareable stat coming up right now. Just tremendous conversation with Jeff Wilson. Again, just so such great work throughout the world with various organizations, has done this for several years. Check out his book as well. But stick around because we're gonna have some more fun with Jeff. You're gonna want to hear some of these stories and insights in our next segment. First episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat is a quick one, coming from TikTok. I thought this one was a fun one just to ruminate on, and that is that 97%, yes, 97% of TikTok users say that TikTok influences what they eat. 97%. That is insane. If you're watching this, listening to this, and you're on TikTok, I guess there's a very, very high likelihood that something on that you've seen on TikTok has influenced what you eat. So what does that mean? What can we take away from that? Well, certainly there's a lot of food content on TikTok that gets seen by a lot of people and has a pretty powerful persuasive power over them as well. So how can you create more and more content around food? Can you have a food dedicated channel for your team, organization, or business? Can you go around the arena or stadium or whatever and try everything one at a time and make one TikTok for everything? You can even batch, create batch produce a bunch of those in the first couple weeks of the season or in the preseason. Just get a look at all the food being done and try it one at a time. Have a fan try it on camera, wherever it might be. Obviously, the food preparation as well and kind of behind the scenes stuff of food is certainly a big one also. We're starting to see a lot of teams do that with equipment managers and travel secretaries around what goes into running a sports team. How about the nutrition side and the food prep side? We've started to see a little bit of that as well. All this is just a mandate, a permission to say, let's just do more food content, see what we can do with it. Dedicated accounts, more and more content, get creative with it. Because clearly TikTok and TikTok users like food. So that's the service stat. Think about it, talk about it, ponder it. Again, 97% of TikTok users say that TikTok influences what they eat. Just astounding. But more importantly, stick around because here's some more fun with Jeff Wilson. I am back from this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Jeff Wilson. He is a sports consultant. He's also author of Leading a Grassroots Sports Club, A Practical Guide to Managing and Developing Your Club, which we'll go into a little bit here as we get into our quick hitting questions. So, Jeff, you nailed your interview. Are you now ready for our Every Tier segment?
I am so psyched. Let's go.
It may not be in order of an order of age level or ability level, so but we are going to work our way up to the tiers here a little bit of the club. This is my best attempt at a pun.
Got it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Number one for you. This will be an interesting one. So we mentioned your travels around the world, seeing different sports, seeing different cultures. So tell me the most memorable or unusual sporting tradition that you've seen around the world.
Yeah, a great one. Most people will probably think I'm going to say football or basketball or volleyball, but it's not. It's actually been the Ulster Grand Prix. The Ulster Grand Prix is road racing. So if you take a public road, you've got trees, you've got posts, all of that. There is a road race in Northern Ireland where they close all the roads and you race around a physical track that is public roads. And to see these bikes doing a top speed of 209 miles an hour, it is just nuts, but it is an amazing event.
That is an awesome one. I'll tell you, I think there's a lot of people looking with interest as to what's going to happen with the MotoGP series now that Liberty Media has it. Like, will they do to MotoGP what they did with F1? It's a really interesting one to watch, and so that kind of remind me of that. Thinking about those bikes going so fast through the streets of Ulster. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I do think they will do a great job. Suppose it gets back to the whole thing of how do they tell the story and tell it
Yeah.
well.
Oh, seriously, especially for a sport like that that has a relatively high burden of entry. Not everyone can afford a high speed motorbike like that. And so the storytelling is key there for sure. Number two for you, Jeff, another interesting one. Tell me the most obscure sport you've seen played live. It could be anything. I'll mention this one.
Yeah, this is an easy one for me. I was in Croatia and I seen water polo out in the ocean. So these guys, they were absolutely massive and they threw a ball and it was like the road runners. Everybody just swim, 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 swim over to get the ball. The ball went this way, swim, swim, swim.
Oh
There was that
gosh.
much waves going on. I actually didn't see where the ball was, but it was highly entertaining, really different, very, very physical. Really enjoyed it. Water polo in Croatia.
Wow, that's incredible. We need to see like beach water polo come to the Olympics or something like that. That you would not see me last in a water polo match longer than like 30 seconds of treading water. Like that's those guys and girls are in incredible shape to play that sport. Wow. Number three for you, Jeff. We've talked a little bit about your book, Leading a Grassroots Sports Club, A Guide to Managing and Developing Your Club. So tell us, like, what is the process like of writing a book? When did you kind of have the idea? You mentioned like connecting with a publisher, and then what do you do to like take all your knowledge, all your insight, and going from concepting it to outlining it to writing it to editing and publication and promote? Like, what's the process like? Because most of us will never write a book in our lives.
In one word, long. It takes absolute ages. So what I did is I started to write down some ideas and some thoughts, and that was the basis, the skeleton of the book. I then sort of identified the target audience, the purpose of the book, the chapters, put a bit more meat on the detail, and then after doing a lot of research, I pulled together, in essence, 10 chapters with templates and processes to follow. When that was all done, then that went to a copywriter. When the copywriter finished it, it then went to an organization that did the page setting. So then I had to look at the page setting. That was looking at everything, how the page looked and all of the figures and the templates and the processes and the creative design. And then, so a lot of toing and throwing at that stage. Then it went to final stage, and then it's gone to print. So that's the basis. But it takes, I would say, it probably took me a year to write, and from when I was with the publisher, Routledge, until now, probably 14 months to get the page copyrighted, page setted, and all the other activities that go with it. So long, and yes, many sleepless nights, but glad it's done.
It's got to feel so cool when you hold that finished book in your hand, a physical but binded book or bound book. Like, what a cool thing. I have to ask you, like, who is your intended audience? Who would you have in your mind when you were writing? Like, is this for, like, can it be used as like a textbook in a sports management program at any university? Is this for a CEO of a sports organization? Is this for someone who's working for an NGB? Like, who would you have in mind?
So number one, it is sports federations. So no matter who, because it covers all sport, for a sports federation that has a club development program. So in other words, their federation, they've got member clubs or member
Yeah.
leagues, and they want to develop them. So the idea is they do a club development program, they get a copy of my book, and then I also will do some live sessions on the back of the book that educates their club. So it's a Number one is the federations through a club development. Number two is through the sports universities. Many have already taken the book. And then number three is for people who wants to start a fire. It's brilliant at starting a fire. You just rip up the pages and you can, and the fire starts straight away. No, it is for those people who want to develop their club, but that's probably the first two is the main target audience.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's really, really interesting to hear about all different ways that you know your concepts can be used and put into practice, and it's really awesome. Number four, I want to dip into your memory bank a little bit. Tell me the most memorable sports game you've ever gotten to attend. What's the one you close your eyes, you're like, I can't believe I was there. That was awesome.
Yeah, a real easy one for me. So Northern Ireland is 1.8 million people. England is about 60 million people. And in 2005, we played England in a qualifying World Cup at Windsor Park. Now, in the England team, they had Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Wayne Rooney. Oh, they had everybody. Ashley Cole, we did not. But what we had was character, teamwork, and we beat them 1-0. So the numbers 1.9 to 60, 70 million doesn't add up. But David that day beat Goliath and beat him well. And so that was for us.
That's
I was
beautiful.
there. My wife was heavily pregnant. I thought she was going to give birth when the goal went in. I've never seen an atmosphere like it. The atmosphere was just electric, and we actually created, I was there t-shirts. It
Wow.
was just a memory I'll never forget. Fantastic.
That's incredible. So does your son say that he was there at the game? Does he say he was there?
Yeah, he doesn't remember it though.
It might have gotten so loud, he might have heard it inside the womb though, some of the cheering, but
I
that's
think that's probably why he likes football, just because of
incredible.
that.
Oh, that's awesome. Number five for you. This is, I'm intrigued by this one. I'm not sure where it's gonna go. So tell me the who is the most famous Irish athlete in history, and if it's different, who's the most famous Irish athlete today?
Okay, so I'm going to go for down football and golf. For football, it's a guy called George Best. So George
Yeah.
Best played for Man United. Probably if his career maybe just wasn't as short, he was one of those players that was just natural. And if anybody watches his clips on YouTube, they will see an all-time great. So George Best, and I think today in the Irish is Rory
Yeah.
McIlroy in the golf. So they would probably be my two famous athletes.
So what was it like being in Ireland when Rory won the Masters?
Do you know whenever somebody puts a dose of happiness, so you get a dose of happiness because somebody said something to you or you've seen something, and all of a sudden your whole demeanor just picks up. It was a dose of happiness.
That was everybody.
That
That's
was
awesome.
everybody.
Walking
Yep.
around with a little extra energy in your step. That's incredible. That's fantastic. Number six, we touched we started talking about this a little bit, but I want to definitely hear your answer to this question here. So tell me, like, what does the growth story look like for women's sport in Europe, both at the major pro levels as well as the grassroots levels? Like, is it seeing similar acceleration to what we're seeing here in the States?
Yeah, massive, and it's so good to see. Massive, 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 especially at grassroots, which gets back to the reason for the podcast.
Yeah.
There are so many girls playing football. That means that the pipeline is being built. So when it goes to the elite pathway, they've got more people to select from. So it just makes sense. So lots and lots playing from U6 upwards. You can see that it is exploding. I think on the pro side, if you watch some of the women's sports at the pro where they're just developing, the standard is so high. I think for me though, I think on the revenue side, I would say to those involved in the women's sport, don't make the same mistake as the men's. And for me, I'm going to be really confrontational here. In, for example, football. For a professional footballer to get paid more in 1 week than a doctor gets played in 1 year does not make sense. Does not make sense. And what that means is the men's game is so much under pressure because of the salaries. So don't follow. Don't just say, I'll get lots of money, go follow. No, it has to be a different model. Learn how the men's game has got it wrong. And we have it wrong in terms of that salary bit. For me, I strongly believe that.
Oh man, that's a again. That's a whole other episode we could do one of these days. There's so much to cut through there, and we're seeing it play out right now in the States as well, with the WNBA trying to negotiate new deals and with their players, and even the NWSL, our major women's sports league, or one of our two major women's soccer leagues, of them changing the rules to be able to keep Trini Rodman here in the States among other superstar players. It's a really fascinating point to consider. Number seven for you, Jeff. Tell me the best app or piece of technology, however you want to characterize it, that you've seen used, or you've used yourself, as far as for match day experience, that has most impacted, whether it's grassroots clubs or big clubs. So I'm giving you a wide range to consider. Just tell me some app or technology that has really blown you away.
So I'll touch on the grassroots side. So there's an app in Sweden. It's the Swedish National Federation app on football, and it's produced by an organization called Sportswick. And it is basically a real interesting app where it's generating all of the revenue for grassroots. There's a whole load of fixtures in there. There's a whole load of content in there. There's a lot of live streaming. Really, really innovative app. Is really good for that grassroots area, and that's by the Swedish Football Federation. Here, I currently use it. Is called Team FeePay, TeamFeePay. Team FeePay. So I can register all my son on the app. All the subscriptions are all handled. It's all the communication is through it. So it takes away all the admin problems and paper trails. So I think this is really good. I think in the pro level, there's lots of good ones like Club Bruges. Club Bruges do a really brilliant app, but I'm actually going to just go out a little bit outside of football and say the Disney app. I love what Disney app does, and how do we take bits of the Disney app and move that into sport is something I'll leave for your listeners.
Some great shout outs there. And I mean, shoot, man, like the technology, the way the technology is affecting grassroots and even just youth sports at large is fascinating. It's so cool to see like some of the really cool like sports technologies that you've seen in the major pro game, like maybe 10, 15 years ago, that felt so advanced and so like you can never see like someone using wearables and ball technology. Now it's available to like anyone almost. You can see like how fast is the soccer the ball that I'm kicking it, or what angle should it be for this kick. It's incredible to see how it's really becoming more dispersed and more available, which is awesome.
Agree. And I think that the app space will be even more, how does that become like a really not just transactional, but it becomes a key part of the community, not just within the club, and how that widens out not only from a data capture and a data profiling, but how that app becomes much more ingrained in not only the club, the stadium, but also the wider community, I think will be an interesting space.
It's a really good call out there, especially with all the stuff we've talked about around. It's not just football, it's bingo night as well, and other things that can ultimately keep us connected, well beyond the sport as well. Time for our food question. Jeff always asks my food question, so tell me if I go out there and we hang out in Belfast and in Ireland, tell me the best meal to get and where are we going to get it.
Have to go with Ulster Fry. It's in the morning. It's fried bread. It's fried soda. It's fried bacon. It's fried sausage. So it's absolutely great for you. You will. It's so healthy. And we call it. We have another name for it. It's called heart attack on a plate. So, but it is delicious. It doesn't sound it, but it actually is. And if anybody comes to Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland. This is something that they will get an Irish or an Ulster fry, and you have to get it. It's very heavy, but they will enjoy it. So I'm going to go with the Ulster fry.
I like it. We will get it, and then we will play football or walk it off a little bit. And it's funny because whenever I have people from the UK, certainly from England, on this podcast, and I ask the food question, they always tell me the food sucks here. We're gonna go to some like France, some local chain or something instead because it sucks. Or we're gonna get some Indian curry maybe. So for you to actually have a real answer of a traditional Irish meal, or at least something akin to that, like with the Ulster fry, that I appreciate that. So I will we will enjoy that together, man.
I am so looking forward to that to happen. And believe me, at the end of it, we'll not be walking, we'll be waddling around somewhere, but this is fine.
Oh, that's fantastic. Coming down the wire here with Jeff Wilson. So, Jeff, for number nine, tell me your favorite club anecdote or case study to cite. What's that one? If you were keeping score of all the ones that you've cited in your talks and your consultations, what's the one that continues to come up because it's such a great story to tell?
Yeah, I love Bohemians in Ireland. It's a football club in the top league in Ireland. And Bohemians is what they're called. Why do I like them? I think they've got really clear values that they put out there. They're a members-based club. They don't do betting. So they've actually said, we don't have a betting sponsor. They do a lot of work in the community, which is why I really like them. The adult, and it's real community work. They also tell a story. So Bob Marley sung at their stadium. It was the last outdoor concert. So what did they do? They created a Bob Marley away team shirt. So the away team shirt tells a story, and it still sells to this day.
That's
So
awesome.
they're really good at that storytelling. They bring in pop, they bring in culture, they bring in music. So really like what Bose have done in Ireland. One other one, Union Saint-Gilloise in Belgium. I love what they do in Union Saint-Gilloise, not only with the fans, but they've got, again, clear values, clear culture, and what I really love, a style of play. So the style of play doesn't change. That means if the manager changes, the style of play doesn't.
That's
And
awesome.
this is absolutely fundamental. That's why they're having problems in certain Premier League clubs, because they don't have a style of play and they're just bringing in a big name manager. No, have a style of play and not recruit anybody, but recruit based on your style of play. But look for a manager well before the other person gets sacked, so that you've got a pipeline on the manager, but also on the player side.
Some incredible shouts there, man. Those were awesome. Last one here, get you out on Jeff. We talked about this a little bit in the interview portion, so I'll give you a couple different options here. So tell me the sport, the global sport whose stock you would buy today because you think it's prime for growth or scale, or if you don't have any one in mind, you can also give me like the sport country perhaps as well. But what's something that you say this has room to grow? I'm gonna buy that stock today because if we look back 10, 20 years from now, it's gonna be a great investment.
Well, I would say, first of all, anyone that's getting into 3x3, I think that's going to be a real interesting investment. That would be number one. But number two, maybe not from a scalability point of view, but just from a credibility point of view, I really love what Jesse Cole is doing at the Savannah Bananas and
Banana
that
ball.
fans first. And you know, it's just really interesting. It's practical, simple, fans first, and it's not bowing down to let's follow the money. It's actually no, let's get the experience. I have no doubt they're doing things that could do better, but for me, I think 3x3 is going to be really interesting, and I think the whole area of the Savannah Bananas, I think, is an interesting case study. Yes, they're not going to do everything right, but I think they've maybe, let's say, broke the mold that has maybe even forced Major League Baseball to change some of their rules. And I think if Major League Baseball would need to go again and change it again, that might be sacrilege to the baseball fan, but I quite like what they do.
It's really cool to I don't you don't really realize that the story of the Savannah Bananas, I guess, is it resonates in Europe too. People are aware of it and the business story, which is really cool to hear because they haven't played over there yet, to my knowledge. But maybe
Nope.
that's the next step. They talk about their world tour, but it's usually more of a joke. At first, they had a one city world tour. Now they actually have they're going all around the country, of course, in the States. So it's really cool to know that some of the stuff that Jesse and his team are doing is making its way overseas. That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's maybe not scalable, whereas 3x3 is scalable, but
Yeah.
I think there's lots of learnings that we can take from
Totally.
them, I think.
All right, Jeff, you nailed your every tier segment. You made it all the way to the top of the pyramid. You are elite, sir. So now it's your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your all-star follow. It can be someone on social, it can be a newsletter, a podcast, an author, whatever, whoever it is, tell us who they are and why they're worth following.
Well, I think apart from obviously yourself, Neil, I think it's really important to do a shout out that people actually do know about the amount of work and effort that you put in. But I listened to one of your podcasts with Lewis from IMG and really enjoyed it. So I think the two that I would say, I really like what you've done. I'm not saying that because I'm on, because it's educational. It's educational, but it's
I
easy
appreciate
to
that.
listen to. And then the high performing podcast is a real interesting one, which is two guys that are into high performance, and it's on YouTube. It's a really, really good series. And then the final one on YouTube is The Business of Sport. So those
Yeah.
three, why do I like all three? Because it is educational and it's genuine people wanting to give some knowledge. It's not selling. It's educational, it's conversational, easy to listen to, and it makes you want to come back and more. So those three is what I would suggest.
Awesome ones there. I appreciate the shout out, of course, but and I'm a fan of the business sport. I'll check out the high performance podcast. It's all about learning in public, sharing knowledge together. We all learn together, we all get better together, and that's why I love being able to have folks like yourself on as well to be able to share that knowledge. And so tell us about where we can find you, Jeff. Where we can find you, where can we find your book? Tell us all the places we can find Jeff Wilson.
Great. So first of all, you can get me on Instagram, X, LinkedIn, on at Jeff WNJ Wilson. So that's Jeff WNJ Wilson. And the book, you can get it on Amazon. Just type in Leading a Grassroots Sports Club, or from our publisher, Routledge. Again, just type in Leading a Grassroots Sports Club. So you can get it from either of those two areas, and I hope people enjoy it. This is going to sound a bit of a stupid at the end. To do this, if somebody comes back to me and says, Jeff, I've implemented some of your templates and it's helped my club, I honestly will say tick in the box. I know some people might say, ah, it's all about sales. It's not actually my top. Genuinely, it's not. It's not. I am not going to sell 20 million. I'm just not.
Yeah.
But if I can influence one club, two clubs, three clubs, or whatever, and people let me know that has helped me, that's the way my dad has brought me up. And that's what I would see as success in terms of the books. But hopefully,
That's
people will enjoy it.
tremendous. And we will link up to Jeff's socials and as well as to the book on the show post. And I love that. Next time we ask about the best case studies, hopefully it'll be someone who benefited from reading the book and implementing some of those strategies and tactics. So just fantastic to have you on the pod today, sharing your knowledge, sharing your insights, sharing your wisdom. And we appreciate you coming on, Jeff.
Thanks, everybody. Have a lovely, lovely 2026.
Thank you so much again to Jeff Wilson joining us from all the way in Europe and just bringing so much good insight. I'm still blown away by all the sports organizations and fan engagement and different challenges and opportunities that he's seen from all of his work and all of his travels. Just a tremendous source of insight and wisdom and knowledge, and really appreciate him coming on the podcast today. Without further ado, this episode of the Digital Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for downloading, listening, or watching. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Hit me up on Twitter, NJ287. Also on LinkedIn, connect with me there. The website, dsmsports.net, where you can find more content and all the episodes. And of course, all the podcast episodes are available on your preferred podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.